As a guitar player, how often do you learn something and it only applies to the song that you're learning? Or at least it feels that way. You know, you learn the intro to a song and it's only the intro to that song. Or you learn part of a guitar solo and it's only a part of the guitar solo in that song. As I talk about this, I feel like that describes the first couple years of me playing guitar. I would learn something and it was very song specific and I didn't know how to apply it anywhere else. Well, that stops today, because today I'm going to be using the 5-Day Blues Challenge as an example on how to learn something specifically for the blues, but also take that and apply it to the rest of your guitar journey. In fact, I'm going to be going through each of the 5 days of the Blues Challenge. You've already got Monday and Tuesday under your belt. We're going to get a sneak peek of Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I'm going to be describing what you're going to be learning. You're going to be seeing what you're going to be learning. And also, I'm going to show you how to apply it elsewhere in your guitar journey. Guitar journey, not your journey. But anyways, let's get started. Let's dig right into the very first exercise. The fifth exercise, coming in at number 5, I should say, is the blues jitter bass. Now, before I describe it, let's go ahead and look at what you'll be learning. This was taken directly from a bass player's repertoire. You might be thinking, well, it's kind of simple. There's not a lot going on. And yes, that's true, but it's incredibly effective for two very distinct reasons. Because number one, you're going to be playing a steady stream of eighth notes. So your pick is learning how to interact with time or with rhythm, right? So you're maintaining this constant down and up stroke all the while playing this bass line, which brings me to the second reason why this particular line is so important. You're getting an idea of how chromatic lines work. Now, chromatics are kind of this weird, mystical thing in guitar playing where it's basically playing one note after the next. It's not a major scale. It's not a minor scale. It's literally one note, the next note, the next note. Think of it like a piano. You play the white key, the black key, the white key, the black key, the white key, so on and so forth. Now, oftentimes, chromatics are really hard to integrate because they sound a little bit weird. There can be a lot of dissonance. But this is a great example of how chromatics can be effective because we hear the starting note, and then we hear the note that it wants to go to. And that's what chromatics are so good at, because you start at a note, and then as you go along this line of notes, it's leading to the final destination, which this particular blues jitter bass line is exactly a great, it's a great stage for chromatics to take kind of the spotlight, if you will. So two awesome things out of a very simple, seemingly simple bass line. Let's move on to the next exercise. The one that you're actually learning today, I like to call triple threat. So let's actually have a look at it and then I'll describe it. So this blues line is, again, it's pretty simple, but it shows some incredibly effective things you can do with your guitar, two of which I want to make mention of. Number one, this entire blues progression is based on the same fretted shape. Literally, through the entire blues progression, your index finger and your middle finger are going to be doing the same exact things. Index is on the G string, middle is on the B string, and then you play the shuffle with your ring and pinky finger. And it's almost a, well, I can call it a non-traditional shuffle because it's based on the higher strings, and usually we think of shuffle on the lower strings. So that's the first thing this thing is really good at. The second thing is your picking hand. If you've never finger picked before, this particular exercise is the gateway to finger picking because On your picking hand, your index and middle finger do the same exact thing through the entire progression. The only thing that shifts is your thumb. So it's a pretty kind of a low hurdle to jump over to get into finger picking. In fact, I would recommend this particular line for everybody. Every guitar player on planet Earth needs to play this line because it gives you this confidence in both your picking hand and your fretting hand. And it also reveals that kind of secret of, hey, if you take the same shape and move it all around the fretboard, physically you're doing the same thing, but you're doing it and moving it so that it works over different chords. Pretty awesome little exercise, and hopefully you're enjoying that one today. All right, let's take a sneak peek and see what we're gonna be learning tomorrow. And this is the number three exercise, what I like to call codachromatic. More on the name here in a little bit. Let's have a look first. Whether you like the blues or not, this line is a must play for every guitar player. Again, I'm gonna call all the guitar players on planet Earth to play this line, not even for the blues. Yes, it's incredibly functional for the blues. In fact, this was taken directly from a blues bass line played by a bass player, but we are applying it to guitar. But beyond that, the reason why this particular line is so effective is because of the string skipping involved. If you're looking for something that will increase your flat pick accuracy, if you're looking for something that is just fun to play, it's very musical and will increase your confidence in your flat pick, this is it. Why? Because you're actually skipping strings. You go from the low E string to the D string, then from the A string to the G string. Now you're doing this using alternate pick strokes. So sometimes you're going down and then reaching way up on the strings to go up. It's really taxing in terms of flat pick accuracy, but it is a great exercise for improving flat pick accuracy. In fact, this is one of those things that when you first start to get into it on Wednesday, you're going to be thinking, man, I'm really frustrated because I keep missing strings. At least that's how I felt when I was recording it. But I can say this, the more you get into the groove of it and the more you start to understand the real estate that your flat pick is responsible for, you're going to really lock in and it's going to be something that will really develop confidence in your flat pick. So look forward to Wednesday because it's going to be a really fun day. And again, this is another example of how you can learn one line. The physical execution is nearly the same, but you can move it to different locations on the fretboard so that it works over different chords. Something that is, well, I got to say this, when I first learned it, it was a complete revelation and something that was like, wait, I can learn something once and then move it around and it'll sound different and work over different chords. It totally blew me away, and that's exactly what I'm getting at with this entire 5-day blues challenge. And speaking of that entire 5-day blues challenge, let's look and see what you're going to be learning on Thursday. It's an exercise I like to call Shapeshifter, and I'll tell you why here in just a second. Let's have a look. There are three things that this particular blues line is very, very good for. In fact, three things that will inform your entire guitar journey. Three things that you can take from this blues scenario and apply it to your entire guitar journey. Number one, the finger picking pattern. It's extremely effective and very simple. It's an initial pinch, and then you go thumb, index, thumb, middle. It's a wonderful pattern you can use over any chord. The second thing is we're taking the same chord shape and moving it across the fretboard. Again, the power of movable shapes. And the third thing. In fact, this is one of those things that, gosh, it's so simple and so silly, but holy smokes, is it effective. And it's that little stinking slide going into the chord. It's a one fret slide, but it adds all the mojo. It adds all the blues kind of magic that you could ever want. And you can apply this really on anything that you want. If you want to add a little bit of panache, a little bit of blues mojo, go a fret behind where you want to go and slide into wherever your intention is or wherever you intend to go or your intended chord, because instantly you'll get this awesome little kind of flash that sounds so damn cool. All right, moving on to what you're going to learn on Friday. Friday is going to be a bit of a celebration because you're going to learn how to play the funkified blues. In fact, I'm going to tell you exactly where this came from, but let's have a look at it first. So I have to be completely honest with you, this particular riff was inspired by Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. It's not the exact riff from Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, but it was very much inspired by Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo. When I was first getting into guitar, my dad would play Johnny Winter records, Rick Derringer records, and I was just infatuated with both of those guitar players. So I thought, you know, if I'm going to do a blues challenge, I got to incorporate something that kind of gets me in touch with my roots. And this is the very thing that does that. Now, there's two things that I want you to take from this exercise when you learn it on Friday. Well, three things really, but the third one, I'll just do a quick pass. It's another movable shape, meaning you learn it once, move it around the fretboard, bam, you can play an entire 12-bar blues progression. The second thing is the use of double stops. Some of the punchiest, most effective things in this blues line is the fact that you're playing two strings at once, a double stop, doing some hammer-ons and things that really kind of add an exclamation point to what you're playing. And the last thing is the percussive strokes. And this is literally just holding the strings and doing what I like to call a dead strum. It seems like it might be a cop-out. Maybe it seems like it's a corner, like you're cutting corners. That's not the case. It's adding another rhythmic texture that adds a whole different layer of depth onto what you're playing. So this particular line, this particular riff really packs in a huge, huge punch. And something that, another disclaimer on this particular riff, it's something that you're gonna have to feel. It's actually, it's way easier to just feel it than it is to count along with it. And along with that, it's easier to play it at faster speeds than it is to play it at slower speeds. So be patient with yourself when you learn this one on Friday. I can assure you it's very rewarding once you get it under your fingers. Now, you might be asking yourself, Tone, this is cool. I'm into the 5-day blues challenge, but why are you breaking down each of these exercises? What's the point? Aren't we just going through this 5 days of blues and we're going to learn everything? It's going to be great. You know, our blues repertoire is going to expand. Yes, that's the case. And to be totally transparent with you, yes, I'm actually showing you all these to build excitement for the 5-day blues challenge. But beyond that, I want you to look at everything you learn on your guitar with the simple, through the simple lens of how can I apply this elsewhere? So not only are you going to learn awesome things during this 5-day blues challenge that's going on literally right now, you're going to be learning things that you can take to your guitar journey and apply them from this day forward. Things about song form, things about movable chord shapes. I've said that quite a lot. And then lastly, you're going to get this kind of almost framework where you're going to start to look at lines and riffs that you're learning and you're going to say to yourself, how can I move this elsewhere? And that's really magical. Like I said before, when I first learned that, when I learned that I could take something, learn it once, and then move it around, it was a complete revelation and something that I was so excited about. And I want you to have that excitement, which is why I wanted to break down each of these exercises. Now, you're also thinking, okay, you talked about the 5-day blues challenge. You may or may not have heard about the 5-day blues challenge yet. Well, if that's the case, you can still participate. It's going on right now. Go to weplayeveryday.com and it'll be taken to a page where I post all of the exercises in addition to the tab so you can learn each of the 5 things I just mentioned right here and reap the benefits. And I can assure you it's going to be a ton of fun. And we all know this. If you have fun with your guitar, that fuels your progress. So if you're not having any fun, you're not going to achieve any progress. However, if you do have fun, you're going to be amazed at the progress that you see with your playing. So with that said, one more thing I want to ask you about the blues, and that is this. What's one blues lick that you learned that knocked your socks off? Or what's one blues lick that you want to learn that you think will knock your socks off? In the comments below, I want to know. So go ahead and name an artist, name a song that contains a blues line that you want to learn, because something tells me that this 5-day blues challenge thing might become, well, might become a little bit of a tradition. So I need to build up the coffers. I need to stock the coffers with some more blues lines. So in the comments below, please let me know again, artist and song. I would love to know what you want to learn. All right, this week on Acoustic Tuesday, you've already learned 5 must-know blues lines. In addition to that, we're going to check out a luthier from Missoula, Montana that uses some interesting building materials. And you're going to hear a true music scholar, a torchbearer of the blues, if you will. And I'm excited because this is somebody you absolutely need to know. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. All that's coming up right after this. I'm Tony Policastro, and this is the Acoustic Tuesday Show. Guitar geeks, unite. Welcome to Acoustic Tuesday, episode 127. This is the show where you're going to learn about acoustic guitar gear, discover acoustic artists, and get inspired to live your very best acoustic life. As with all episodes of Acoustic Tuesday, I'm going to dig into my guitar geek list for the week. But before doing that, since the whole idea is having fun with your guitar, progressing on guitar, I have a little coaching tip that I want to share with you. And it all surrounds the idea of small wins. Now, what is a small win? A small win is something that you do on guitar that you feel good about. It could be something as simple as playing when you don't feel like it. It could be something as simple as changing your strings for the first time. It could be something as simple as, holy smokes, I finally played a G chord and it was buzz free. Or it could be something like, wow, I played a bar chord and it was actually pretty easy and it sounded good. I'm pretty excited about that. Those are all small wins, and I want you to celebrate those. Why? Well, small wins seem pretty inconsequential. It seems like, well, whatever. Yeah, I guess I did that. It was pretty cool. But stop. Stop right there and actually celebrate the small wins. Small wins are a keystone of your guitar journey because it shows signs of progress. So often we're focused on the next best thing, the next thing we have to learn. Or so often we feel like we're stuck on a plateau or in a rut where no matter what we do, we just can't get any better. It feels like it's out of our control. I want you to take pause. I want to challenge you this week. Take pause before you pick up your guitar and just think back to the day prior and think of one small win that happened. It could be your timing. It could be your note clarity. It could be that the flat pick felt really good in your hand. Take pause and celebrate that small win. Do it for an entire week, because I guarantee you, by coming into your practice sessions with this positive mindset, with the positive momentum already rolling, your practice sessions will be that much more beneficial and the small wins will start raining down upon you, much like, I don't know, think of a storm, a rainstorm of sorts, like a historically big rainstorm. That's how much the small wins are going to rain upon you. I can't think of a historic rainstorm, but I'm sure somewhere there was one. And that's the one I want you to think of, because that's how the small wins are going to be bestowed upon you when you start celebrating them. All right, enough about coaching. Let me move on to your Guitar Geek trivia question for the day. Now, this one is very exciting because it not only wraps up history, not only wraps up some of my favorite artists of all time, but it involves a record company, almost a near mythical record company. So here is your Guitar Geek trivia question. At one point in their careers, Mississippi John Hurt, Blind Blake, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Charlie Patton, Skip James, Son House, amongst many others, recorded for the Paramount Record Company. In what year was the Paramount Record Company founded? A, 1906, B, 1917, C, 1923, or D, 1941. Go ahead and ponder that, and at the end of the show, I'll be sure to give you the answer, along with some additional trivia that may have you searching for a musical history treasure in a river somewhere. You'll see what I mean when I read the answer. All right, let's move on to our next segment here. And this is focused on a builder that lives just outside of Missoula. His name is Sean Cotchell, and I had never heard of him before until I went to the Red Ants Pants Music Festival, which is in White Sulphur Springs, Montana, back in, I want to say it's either 2014 or 2015. And actually, here's Sean right here with a fantastic mustache. He actually competed in the beard and mustache competition that day. But also, you'll see a fella showing off his arms there in the background. That's actually me at the festival. I found this randomly and I thought, oh, this is cool. I want to include this on the show. But I met him actually at that moment. And I got to tell you this, he builds some of the most interesting guitars I think you'll ever see because of the materials that he uses. He builds resonators. He builds electric guitars. He builds cigar box guitars. He builds lap slides of all different varieties. And you can tell that he's inspired by, well, thoughts and things of, we'll say, yesteryear. In fact, he uses some really interesting building materials like old barn wood, found objects, shotgun shells, bullet casings, even antlers and things like that. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And here's an example. And it's got skulls on it, which you all know. And if you don't, I'll tell you, I'm a sucker for skulls. Any skulls of any shape or sort, I just am immediately drawn to. And I want to buy this, but unfortunately, it's sold already. I digress. Let's actually hear an instrument that Sean built in action, played by none other than Sean himself. Here is a hand-built cigar box guitar. He actually made the box as well, and he's playing a little slide on it. So here's Sean playing that. Sean and I immediately hit it off at this festival, and seeing his stuff, I was just immediately inspired. So I called him after returning home from the festival, and I said, Sean, I got an idea. I really want to build a lap steel. And I heard through the grapevine that he had just got some wood from Henry Ford's ranch or homestead somewhere in Michigan. And I thought, man, how cool would it be to use that wood on a lap steel? And then make it like a Ford-themed lap steel. So on the headstock of this lap steel, it's got the V8 kind of Ford logo. It's got the shotgun shells, and it's got, of course, the Henry Ford barnwood. Really, really exciting stuff. And I am so happy with the result. The lap steel is awesome. It looks super vibey. It's very Mojo infused, and it sounds awesome as well. And you might be thinking, okay, Tone, I've heard you mention this whole barnwood thing many times, but what does he actually mean? Like, what is he actually using? Is it like literal wood from an old barn? And I'm going to say yes, but I'm not going to explain it. I'm actually going to have Sean explain it. He did a piece for this Montana film company, kind of mini documentary company called Under the Big Sky. And here's a little snippet of that.
When people build instruments that are typically using like spruce and cedars and maples and whatnot, I'm using old fir, old larch, old pine. They're not considered guitar building woods. The wood that I'm using was harvested from old growth forests. Just that age itself makes it into a tonal wood that works well for making instruments. I always feel like there's some kind of a soul in that older wood, just because it had been worked so hard to begin with. Cut by hand, these guys drug these logs out of the woods and then had to make a board out of them. If it wasn't done by hand, it was done by an old type sawmill. Just like there's so much work went into that one board before it ever became erected into a building that then was in the harshest conditions Montana had to offer. Most of it came from the highlands, so it really got beat with the wind and the weather and that hot sun. All these minerals and all these things have soaked into this wood, creates a unique sound and style. Even just holding that piece of wood, it just has a richer feel to it. It's really funny because you can take an old pine board from an 1880s barn and put it up against a pine board that you get at Home Depot, And it's just like the idea of like gourmet food over like fast food. That other board feels almost fake compared to that old wood. A lot of those people are like, hey, I'm gonna burn this old building. I'd be like, no, I'll take it just to save that wood. A lot of it is rotten, but there's a lot of good stuff in there at the same time. It stood the test of time. I can't see it just go to waste by being lit on fire. Let's try to make something out of it.
I want to encourage you to check out Sean Kochel's website, Kochel Guitars. You can visit that by just going to acousticlife.tv/AT127. You'll not only see links to Sean's site, but also the rest of the pieces of that documentary, that Under the Big Sky documentary. And I'll also mention this. If you don't get a guitar from Sean, that's fine. I just want you to check it out. But he's got some of the coolest merch. He's got those camping cups, those kind of metal camping cups with the coolest logo, like super vintage inspired, just kind of almost bluesy. You just got to check, even if it's just for the stickers, you got to check it out. He's a great guy and somebody I definitely recommend that, well, if it's in the cards for you to get a guitar, his guitars are very reasonably priced and definitely unique. So do a little bit more research. Again, visit acousticlife.tv/AT127. Speaking of the Acoustic Tuesday show, let's visit some comments back from Acoustic Tuesday episode number 125. This is the show where I looked at five iconic electric guitar players and I caught them red-handed playing the acoustic guitar. And holy smokes, did y'all have some great, great comments that I'm going to read right now. This first one comes from LKD. And this is what they said. Hey, Tony. If you want to butter up your wife so you can go on the Route 61 tour, a nice piece of jewelry might work. A diamond bracelet or a ruby ring would definitely persuade me to say yes. Just got done with the 30-day intro part of your course, and I'm having a great time learning. Thanks. Well, thank you, LKB, for not only leaving a comment, but jumping into the 30 Days to Play course on Tony's Acoustic Challenge. And to comment on your comment about getting a piece of jewelry, I would do that, but I fear that purchasing the jewelry would dig into my guitar buying funds. So it's really, I'm caught between a rock and a hard place. I just don't know what to do. But I appreciate the idea, and maybe I'll give it a spin one of these days when I feel like I've got enough guitars. We all know that that's not a thing. I'm going to just move on. I'm going to get myself in trouble if Whitney watches this show. The next, speaking of Missoula, this actually comes from one of our Missoula viewers. Pat Cross says this about the episode. I've died and gone to heaven. Jimmy, Buddy Guy, and Johnny, three of my five favorite guitar players. Those three are the reason I try to play guitar. You should also mention that Johnny Winter helped revive Muddy Waters' career, and many folks would never have learned about Muddy had it not been for Johnny W. Tony, why do you buy into these artificial constraints? A top five is no less arbitrary than a top eight, or even a top 11 list. Keep up the good work, and I can't wait until next week. Well, Pat, I think I might take your challenge. Maybe I'll do a top seven. It feels weird to me, so I think I should do it. And furthermore, I wanted to mention the whole Johnny Winter's Muddy Waters connection, because for the longest time on Muddy Waters' Hard Again album, the song Mannish Boy, it's awesome. It's just this cool, like very raw recording, and there's this guy hooting and hollering in the background. Like Muddy will sing a line, and then there's this big yell in the background. Well, that yell is actually none other than Johnny Winter. Johnny Winter, I think, either co-produced or was in that recording session involved in some very integral way, along with playing on the tracks, but also maybe behind the board or something along those lines. So thanks for reminding me of that, Pat. Awesome, awesome comment. Our next comment comes from Patrick Batty, and he says this. So cool. I can't wait to read this for you guys. Nice shout out to the Elma Combo in Toronto. Tony, I spent many an evening there back in the mid-70s. It was quite a place, and just two blocks from my offices at the University of Toronto. They only sold beer there in one-quart bottles back then, so I had to be darn careful. Also, I just happened to watch the Film Festival Express on AXS TV yesterday. I remember when that train went across Canada back in the day, but never got to one of the concerts they put on from it. I'm truly enjoying and learning a ton from my Tony's Acoustic Challenge membership. I started in just a few weeks ago. Thanks for being a great mentor. Well, thank you, Patrick, for leave in a comment. Thanks for becoming a Tony's Acoustic Challenge member. And give yourself a pat on the back for just hopping in and going for it. Great job. And I got to say, I'm a little bit jealous that you got to visit the Elma Combo. Ever since I've seen that footage of Stevie Ray Vaughan at the Elma Combo, it's been on my list as one of those places where I feel like you could just go to and feel the mojo, speaking of blues and things like that. All right, our next comment comes in the form of a pair. These two comments were left right next to one another, and I thought, I can't single just one of these out. I got to include them both. And it pertains to electric guitarists that I forgot on my list. And I'm a little embarrassed to say both of these names, but thanks to the Guitar Geek community for keeping me in line. So first, Jennifer John says this: don't forget about John Mayer. And this was one of those, I read this comment and immediately I was like, duh, what? I mean, the guy not only has a signature electric guitar, he also has multiple signature acoustic guitars. The Stagecoach, the 0042 Stagecoach is a guitar that's still on my wish list. But he's an incredible acoustic player as he is an electric player. And it totally, totally slipped my mind. So thank you, Jennifer, for reminding me of that. She went on to say, how do we send mail into your studio? Well, I'm so glad you asked, Jennifer. All you have to do is address it Acoustic Life and send it to 2335 Birdie, like the golf term, Drive, Bozeman, Montana, 59715. It's that easy. The next comment comes from Max Heron, frequent Acoustic Tuesday watcher and contributor. He said, how about some guy named Eric Clapton and the entire Unplugged album? Also a very renowned electric guitar player that is well-versed in the acoustic realm as well. And Max, I appreciate you slapping me upside the head with that one. A very obvious one that was a misstep. Sometimes you're just so close, you don't see the obvious things, or some other, you know, saying like that, the forest for the trees or something like that. One of those type of statements is applicable here. But I want to send my thanks to everybody who contributes in the comments. It's so cool to hear from each of you. A couple more mentions. Dee Dee mentioned another guitar player, Walter Trout. Now I have to do some research on that. Sean B mentioned Rory Gallagher. Jonathan Meyer mentioned Jack Broadbent, who I did a quick little research on, and I'm very, very excited at what I found. I can't wait to do more. And Jack Mulligan asked this in one of his comments. He says, where is it best to watch the show and comment? Is it on acousticlife.tv or here on YouTube? Well, honestly, whichever's most convenient for you. If you're signed up and you're a subscriber, you'll get an alert via YouTube, so you can watch it here on YouTube. And for those of you who get the Acoustic Tuesday emails, you can go ahead and click that link. That'll take you to acousticlife.tv. Wherever you watch it, wherever it's easiest for you, wherever you feel most at home and a part of the Guitar Geek community is exactly where I want you to watch it. You can comment on either place. I see them all, I read them all, and it's darn awesome to see the conversation that gets started. And lastly, speaking of Acoustic Tuesday, I do want you to know that you can support the Acoustic Tuesday show by purchasing Acoustic Tuesday merchandise. We have a full merchandise store at acoustictuesday.store. I want you to go there and I want you to pick out your favorite shirt, hooded sweatshirt, tank top, pair of socks, and yes, even the signature coffee mug, which is my favorite piece of merchandise because I get the most use out of it. And it looks pretty snazzy, and it keeps my drink nice and hot. In fact, there's only a little bit left. Excuse me one second. It just tastes better coming out of the Acoustic Tuesday mug. You know what I mean? You just have that mug that makes things taste better. The Acoustic Tuesday mug is that very thing. Anyways, here's what I want you to do. I want you to visit acoustictuesday.store. I want you to pick out your favorite piece of merch, get it shipped straight to your door. That's step number one. Step number two is, once that merchandise arrives, go ahead and put it on, hold the coffee mug, put the socks on, whatever you ordered, use it, and take a picture of yourself wearing it or using that merchandise. And then the last step is to go to acousticlife.tv and submit your picture. Click the submit link in the top menu, and that will allow you to submit your picture. You can tell us your story. You can also submit a Guitarsonal picture if you want to, or you could submit an artist recommendation or even a gear recommendation there as well. So I'd love to hear from you. Now, I did have an arrival in the mailbag, which led me down a bit of a black hole. I gotta be honest. It's a seemingly just very, very simple mail arrival, but holy smokes, Does It Pack a Punch? Fretboard Journal, issue number 45 came. I'm super excited about it. What a delightful magazine. I cannot say enough good things about this publication. It's a quarterly. The photography is beautiful. The writing's great. Jason Verlinde does a great job. Shout out to him. Hello if he's watching. But here's the cool thing. So I'm flipping through. I didn't do a deep dive yet. I was just flipping through, and I see an ad for Thompson Guitars. And who's on the ad? Molly Tuttle and Billy Strings, two of my faves. So I got my first Molly Tuttle mention, which is awesome. And then somebody commented on the show last week, and they said, hey, Tone, Molly Tuttle just celebrated her 27th birthday. So I just want to wish a very happy but belated birthday to Molly Tuttle. Congratulations. Happy birthday. Congratulations on another lap around the sun, or whatever that phrase is. I feel like I always mess that up, but I'll go with it. And I also want to mention, speaking of Molly Tuttle, let me just get on the Molly Tuttle soapbox right now. She just added some tour dates, and make sure to check out her website for that. It looks like she's got some spring tour dates. Unfortunately, nowhere near Montana. But Molly, if you're watching, we'd love to have you back in Montana. Your first show here was delightful, and I'm sure the second one would be just more, even more delightful. And then talk about a perfect storm. You want to talk about a perfect storm? I love Thompson Guitars. Let me just say that. I'm very biased. I own one. I love it. It's a Cuban mahogany dread. It's incredible. It's a cannon. But I just got a report from NAMM. And Thompson Guitars is releasing a Molly Tuttle signature model. It's gorgeous. The sunburst is gorgeous. The inlay is gorgeous. Even the label is gorgeous. And I want to congratulate both Thompson Guitars and Molly Tuttle for bringing an exceptional guitar to market. Now, here's the caveat. They're only making 30 of them. 29. I'll probably get one. So they're only making 29 of them. I was just telling the Colorado Avalanche fan here at the office, the fella behind the camera, I said, I might have to start, you know, wringing out some bank accounts to try and get this particular guitar, because it's very, very cool. I haven't even heard it yet, but it looks amazing. So just to add that to your list of awesome things that are happening in the acoustic world. Now I want to move on to our artist of the week, and one that is a true torchbearer of the blues. In fact, this is an artist that I thought to myself, you know, we've been doing all these blues themes. What is an artist that links the past to the present and ironically kind of almost links to the future as well? And I couldn't think of a better example than Stephan Grossman. Stephan Grossman is a phenomenal player, an incredible historian, an outstanding teacher, and just an incredible guitar geek, and contributed so much to the acoustic guitar world, from signature model guitars to just stacks and piles of incredible instructional resources. Stephan Grossman is, he is somebody whom I continue to look up to as a teacher, as a music enthusiast, as a music historian type. Not that I'm a historian by any means, but something I strive to be. He has it all, and he's just pure magic. From the way he teaches to the way he plays. But rather than me try and actually describe it, let's go ahead and watch him play. Here he is playing the Dallas Rag on a vintage Gibson Advanced Jumbo. That's a great sounding guitar, and in his hands, it sounds absolutely heavenly. Here it is.
Play the rag.
Got some other things I want you to see from Stephan Grossman, but first, did you notice how long his pinky is? I don't know. I actually just noticed this. I'm sitting here watching it as it was playing, and I was like, is that real? Does he have a pinky extension? I don't think so. It's a long pinky, and it works well for playing ragtime blues guitar. I mean, holy smokes, it's pretty amazing. Speaking of performances, I found an interesting one, and this is really funny, because I found out about Stephan Grossman through John Fahey. John Fahey has a song entitled lovingly The Assassination of Stephen Grossman. And I was like, wow. So apparently they had a friendly-ish feud of sorts. So then Stephen Grossman responds with The Assassination of John Fahey. And here it is for your listening pleasure. Now, first, I have to comment on his guitar. The make, the model, I don't know what it is, but it looks incredible and it sounds awesome. Second, I need to correct myself because his pinky is not the only digit that's long. His entire fretting hand is just got these beautifully long digits, and it seems like he can reach like 40 frets with just two fingers. It's amazing to watch him play. But nonetheless, he is an acoustic guitar player that you need to know about. So much more than just an acoustic guitar player. As I mentioned at the beginning, he's kind of, he has positioned himself a torchbearer of sorts. He kind of connected and even helped rediscover some of the very old blues players during the blues revival, the blues kind of folk revival. He helped bring them to center stage and shine a light on them and said, hey, these players are important, and we need to know about these players. We need to record these players. We need to learn how these players played. We need to hear these players. So Stephen Grossman was a key player in that movement, but also talking about, you know, the future and things that he still impacts to this day. He has, as I mentioned, piles and piles of educational resources on how to play in certain styles, how to play just like Mississippi John Hurt, how to play just like Blind Blake, how to play just like Reverend Gary Davis. In fact, he was a student of Reverend Gary Davis in New York. I mean, talk about the list of people he's connected to. Is just, it's like opening up a blues encyclopedia. It's insane. And I, in fact, because I'm a total dork and I went down the complete Stephen Grossman rabbit hole, I found some wonderful interviews of him talking about Reverend Gary Davis and all these amazing blues players. And there's one little part where three blues players were sitting at a table with him in his parents' basement. And rather than me describe it, I'm going to let Stephen Grossman describe it. Here it is.
Yeah. Now, at that time, with all the other artists being rediscovered and the festivals and them intermingling with each other, and wide variety of personalities amongst all of them, is there any time that you can think of when John Hurt was with, say, you know, Skip James or Son House, anything?
Yeah, it was sort of interesting. I remember a couple of times. One was at my, I had to pick up Ed Denson. Ed was involved with Tacoma Records as well as Kicking Mule Records, but he was involved with John Fahey. And they were sort of taking care of, when Skip James and Buckle White had just been rediscovered, they were taking care of them as, quote, managers, agents. And Ed was traveling with Son, Skip, and John Hurt. And for some reason, they were coming to New York City at Penn Station, and the train was arriving at, I think, at like 1:30 in the morning. And I was at Cooper Union School of Architecture, and I was doing an all-night project. And so I said, well, I'll meet you, and they can, you know, come to, I was living with my parents at that time, and they can come to my parents' house, and you can just hang out there. And then I think at 6 or 7, Ed had to take Skip and John to down to Washington, and Son was still at the house, and then he was going to be picked up by someone else and be taken somewhere to some other place. But when they came, when I finally found them, because I said, well, we'll meet you at Penn Station, forgetting that there are different corners at Penn Station. So I went to all the corners. So about 2 o'clock, I found them, took them down to the house, and my parents had a wall, which was just the library full of books. So we were sitting at the table, and Mississippi John is just, I put some whiskey on the table, and everyone's just very low-keyed. knowing that they really couldn't go to sleep. They had to stay up to catch that early morning train. Skip right away just looking at all the books.
Really?
He just got up and he's just looking at all the books and detached. And where his son, he just wanted to drink and drink and drink. And after that, drink and drink and drink some more if he could. And John was just ordinary, you know, moderation and just sitting there.
Wow.
You know? I think there was a little...
Now, I have to say, I've watched that clip probably a good 4 or 5 times. And that's just a snippet. I mean, it's a 30 or 40 minute interview. And every single time he describes that scene of Sunhouse, Skip James, Mississippi John Hurt, and himself sitting around a table, I just smile. Because first of all, one of the pieces is it just feels like a dream sequence. How would you ever find yourself at a table with just these pillars of the fingerstyle blues, of Delta blues? It's unreal to me. I listened to that in complete disbelief, but he was there. He was connected to all these players. And one of the things that I feel, I just got to be honest with y'all. I watched that and then I went into this complete rabbit hole of Stephen Grossman, watched all these interviews, and anything that's entitled, you know, I think it's Stephen Grossman's Guitar Workshop. Obviously he's had some part in, but wow, what appreciation I have for him. And I'm sad to say I didn't have that appreciation, you know, years ago, because I didn't really understand. And now the more I understand, the more I know about, you know, learning about these older players and the key pivotal role that Stephen Grossman played in this, I just have this profound appreciation for him. And just, you know, I guess retroactively want to thank him for making all of this information accessible to all of us guitar geeks. Wow. It's like, it's almost, I would almost equate Stephen Grossman with like an Alan Lomax and the importance that he has in preserving some of this acoustic guitar culture. And with that in mind, I want to introduce a couple of things that I think you should be aware of that Stephen Grossman has made or created. I've got some albums, but also there's a book series that is called Early American Blues Masters. And there's this one you're looking at right now is an anthology edition where there's multiple artists in one book, but he has the country blues, he has the Delta blues. In addition to that, he has a book dedicated to each artist and their playing style, kind of some of the intricacies and the kind of personal fingerprint that they had that was their style. He kind of decodes all of that stuff and puts it in book form. So make sure to check those out. He's got a lot of resources out there, DVD as well, but that book series is one that I think... I think it's a must own for all of you guitar geeks. And you can find links to those at acousticlife.tv/AT127. Now onto the albums that I want to mention. He has a ton of albums out. I've only selected 3 for you to check out, but I'll tell you a little Stephen Grossman secret here at the end when I get through this list. First is Yazoo Basin Boogie, released in 1970. This is one of 2 covers. This is the UK pressing, I believe, on Tacoma Records. There's this cover, and then there's another cover that they released later. Same content, but a fantastic album very early in his career. Next, Love, Devils, and the Blues. And between the name of this album and the picture on the cover, that pretty much says it all. It says that you must listen to it, is what it says. That was released in 1988, and then released in 2012, Country Guitar Blues Festival, that features not only Stephen Grossman, but a bunch of other fantastic players. I want to say Duck Baker is involved in that one as well. Another great player, but definitely an album you should check out. Now, the key to finding albums by Stephen Grossman, especially if you're a vinyl lover, is you go to any antique store, any thrift store. I don't think Stephen Grossman is necessarily a household name, unfortunately, but fortunately for us record geeks, we can go to these thrift stores and things and find these records for probably $1. And they are filled with they're filled with invaluable music, very important music. And it's a treat to find those. In fact, I want to mention 2 other albums just in passing because they're not directly blues, but they're very influential. He has 2 albums with John Renbourn. One is just John Renbourn and Stephen Grossman. found that at a thrift store. It was a buck. The next one, I think, is called Under the Volcano. It's also John Renborn and Stefan Grossman. Found that at an antique store. It was $2.50. So a little bit more, you know, double the price, almost more than double the price of the first one, but I digress. Also found Yazoo Bass and Boogie on Reverb LP, and I believe it was $5. So a lot of good music for, if we add all those up, under 10 bucks. I mean, pretty awesome. Again, to learn more about Stefan Grossman, see that interview in its entirety, see those performances in their entirety, and look at all those albums, visit acousticlife.tv/AT127. All right, we are ready to wrap up the show, but I do have to remind you, you had a Guitar Geek trivia question, and I want to remind you what that question was, and of course, give you your options again. Now, this question is one that I love because it wraps up all of my favorite things: history, music, and records. And amazing players, four of my favorite things. So just as a quick reminder, here is your Guitar Geek trivia question. At one point in their careers, Mississippi John Hurt, Blind Blake, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Charlie Patton, Skip James, Sunhouse, amongst many others, recorded for the Paramount Record Company. In what year was the Paramount Record Company founded? Was it A, 1906, B, 1917, C, 1923, or D, 1941? Well, I'm happy to say this. If you answered A, C, or D, you're not correct. The answer was B, 1917. Paramount Records was founded in 1917 by United Phonographs, a subsidiary of the Wisconsin Chair Company based in Grafton, Wisconsin. Paramount published some of the nation's most important early blues recordings between 1929 and 1932. The label's offices were located in Port Washington, Wisconsin, and the processing plant was located at 1819 South Green Bay Road in Grafton, Wisconsin. Side note, I think that should be on all of our lists to visit at some point. I don't know if it's still there, but it sounds like an important place in music history. The label was managed by Fred Dennett Key. Now check this out. This is where things get super mythical and awesome. The Great Depression drove many record companies out of business. Paramount stopped recording in 1932 and closed in 1935. I do believe it was picked up later. It was purchased later, but it was never the same as it was in this heyday. Like other record companies during the Great Depression, Paramount sold most of its master recordings as scrap metal. Some of the company's recordings were said to have been thrown into the Milwaukee River by disgruntled employees when the company was closing in the mid-1930s. Okay, I want to swim in the Milwaukee River, but not during the winter, and I want somebody else to do it for me, basically, because I would love to find some of these original masters. Now, that being said, being a guitar geek, I did a little bit more research. It's been the subject of two different, I think, Discovery Channel documentaries where they actually go and try and find these masters to no avail. None of the masters have been found to date. But musical myth suggests they might be just lying in the bottom of the Milwaukee River. I don't even know if that's a swimmable river. By comparing it to the Chicago River, probably not. Probably not at all. Probably can't even go in there without like a hazmat suit. But anyways, I digress. Pretty awesome musical trivia. Pretty awesome little sequence of events. In fact, I should mention that Third Man Records, Jack White's company, did a release, a two-series box set release of Paramount Records. We're talking Charlie Patton, some of the greats that I listed off. Now, these box sets are not inexpensive. They're about $500 a piece. But they contain good chunks of music. If any of you want to gift them to me, I would not stop you, but I would have a lot of explaining to do when I brought those record box sets home to Whitney, because she knows about these box sets. She knows how much they cost. And I think she might have me live in the garage if I showed up with those. But time will tell. I don't know. I haven't received them yet. But anyways, let's take a sneak peek into next week and see what's going to happen next week on Acoustic Tuesday. Next week, we're going to learn the quick way to find any note on the guitar without having to memorize anything. It's true, it's possible, and I guarantee you can do it. We're also going to head to Vegas to get our faces melted by a beauty of a guitar. Literally, you're going to need like a welding mask for this because your face will melt. And we're going to listen to an acoustic duo that continues to transform the possibilities of acoustic guitar. Literally, when you hear these folks, you will be mesmerized, amazed, and wondering how they make such noises. That's all happening next week on Acoustic Tuesday. Remember, you can catch Acoustic Tuesday every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. here on YouTube. And of course, for your Acoustic Tuesday fix in between Tuesdays, visit acousticlife.tv, where you can do a deep dive on anything I've ever mentioned on the show before, all the way back to episode one. Yes, 126 episodes ago. It's all living at acousticlife.tv. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. Thank you for being a guitar geek. And remember, guitar geeks unite. Cheers.